News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Good morning to you. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg. On Thursday morning, got a little fog, so be careful as you're driving this morning on your way to work and school. And this morning, I'm so pleased to have joining us by phone from his office, Terrence Gross with Gross & Schuster. He is the founder and managing partner for a personal injury law firm, and they take care of lots of people over the years, lots of history there. Good morning, Terry. How are you this morning?
Doing well. Thanks for letting me do this makeup program. We missed one a while back, and it's not a Wednesday, but here we are. And as you know, I always come with a topic. I've been a lawyer for 46 years, primarily practicing personal injury law, and I'm in practice with my three law partners who are all my sons. We have five offices throughout the Panhandle: Pensacola, Milton, Crestview, Mary Esther, and Navarre. And I want to go over a topic that you and I have not talked about, and it is what to do after a car accident. What are the do's and don'ts? Because there's some things that could have a major effect down the road. Maybe 3 years later, you're in a courtroom, and a quiet courtroom with a jury, and things that you did or did not do after an accident can come back to haunt you or maybe help you. So I will say a caveat before I get into my first thing I suggest is that every accident is different. There are accidents where you're totally incapacitated. You're in your car, airbags off, you can't move, you're hurt, you're scared, and EMTs come and they cart you off on a stretcher by ambulance to the ER. Well, if that's the case, you can't do what I'm going to suggest because you're immobilized, you're incapacitated. But there are many accidents where you are stove up, you're kind of dazed or whatever, but you do get out of your vehicle and you do walk around and you are trying to survey what the heck just happened. And I know it's hard to, you're not thinking about a lawsuit, you're not thinking about a lawyer, but what I would suggest highly is all of us have telephones these days, which means all telephones are cameras now. So take pictures not only of your car, of their car as well, and hopefully you can take pictures before they're moved because it may become important, may become a feature at some later date. It also brings out the you see the cars crunched together, it just in a quiet jury room 3 years later, the effect is to be significant. Skid marks if they're out there, airbags deployed, whatever's relevant. There may be eyewitnesses, and here's the problem with eyewitnesses. The average eyewitness, they may stop to see if you're okay, but they're on the way to work, they're on the way to a doctor's appointment. They don't want to get caught up for 2 hours in an accident investigation, and they say, are you okay? Yeah, I think I'm okay, and they take off. Well, before that eyewitness takes off, please, and use the phone instead of writing down anything, take a picture of their business card or ID, something, so that you can give it to your lawyer once you retain one, presumably. And then that lawyer could take a statement, and maybe that witness will totally help you and contradict some kind of lie that the defendant is conveniently talking about at a later date. So these are things that really have a major effect possibly down the road, easy to do. The next thing is, and this is just a personal thing, a lot of people say you're stove up, but you're walking around, you know nothing's broken. You just don't feel right. Maybe you have a dull headache. Maybe you got some slight neck pain. Going to a traditional ER is not a great idea because what happens is the ERs are the least effective means of initial treatment and the most expensive. So depending which ER you go to, some of them could be $10,000 to $20,000 for an ER visit after a car wreck. They do a couple of CT scans. Of course, there's no broken bones and whatnot. And next, next you get hit with this bill, well, that bill could suck up all your no-fault, because Florida is a no-fault state that will pay 80% of your bills up to $10,000. So even if you go to an emergency center, one of these little smaller emergency centers, that bill may be $300 or $500. Maybe they do an x-ray, maybe not. Maybe it's $700, $800. And then you have no fault left to treat. Now, you may be thinking, well, Mr. Gross, why are you just talking about no fault? I got full health insurance. I ain't got Medicare. I got TRICARE. I got Blue Cross. That's all true, baby. But they have a right to subrogate. Anything any insurance company pays but no fault has a right to get paid back at the end of the case. Medicare pays, they'll have their hand out when you settle. TRICARE, definitely. Most Blue Cross or United Healthcare programs do. So just something to think about. Seeing your PCP is probably a bad idea. Most PCPs will cut you off. You could have been at the same doctor, have a great relationship for 15 or 20 years, and you're calling to make an appointment, and you even know the lady, you're in there so often, you know, for high blood pressure, diabetes, whatever, and you call, hey, this is Meg. I was just in a car. I'd like to see Dr. Jones. And then they pause and go, Dr. Jones doesn't see people for car wrecks. Why? He's my doctor. I'm sorry, we don't see people. They're so scared of litigation and lawyers and letters and depositions that a lot of PCPs won't even see their existing clients. And they're just not equipped to really give diagnoses and so forth. So I think your initial treaters could be like the urgent care, where they can prescribe medications, and then you could see either a chiropractor or a pain doctor. Pain doctors are now everywhere. When I first started up, there was no such thing as a pain doctor. Pain doctors are medical doctors. They are really trained as anesthesiologists. They just have elected not to put people to sleep for surgery. They're out in the public, seeing the public, and managing people with acute pain and chronic pain. And so forth, and they are most of them are very attuned and aware of the spine, which is the usual most prevalent injury. It's usually neck and back pain. Even the headaches are usually the result of a neck injury. So that would be probably your best alternatives to think about. Now, of course, a lot of people are worried about the property damage to their vehicle, and that's understandable. It may be totaled. It may have been towed from the scene. There's a towing bill. There's being stored. They're towing at $60 a day, and you're starting to freak out. So, yes, you could certainly call your company, but here's the first thing I want to let you know. The first trick, because you got to understand, all these insurance companies, all these insurance adjusters are trained to do what? Are they trained to hand out money to you? Or are they trained to save the company money? And it's the latter. They're trained to save money. So the first thing they want you to do is to give a recorded statement. And they make it sound like you must do this. You must give a recorded statement as like a condition precedent before they will make a collision claim, a property claim, a no-fault claim, and there's nothing further from the truth. There is no rule, there is no law that requires you to give a recorded statement. So if they ask you about it, say, I'll talk to you, I don't want anything recorded, and it's a criminal violation to record anybody's conversation on the telephone without their knowledge and consent. So you can say, I am not consenting to a recorded statement. I will talk to you, and I don't even want to talk about my car. I really don't want to talk about my injuries. Now, why is that? This is your own company. Am I just trying to get you to be adversarial with your own company? Well, let me just clue you in. Florida is what we call a 1020 state. That means they can sell as low as $10,000 of bodily injury per person, and you have lawful coverage. there are only two states left that sell 10,000. I think it's us and Rhode Island. Everybody has moved to a minimum of 25,000. I know for sure Louisiana, Mississippi, Georgia, Alabama, all our sister states have a minimum bodily injury of 25,000. But yet ours is only 10. Well, 10 is not deadly squat in this day and age, which means if the person that hits you only has a 10 limit, and I would suggest to you, I haven't read anything on this, but after interviewing hundreds and thousands of people over the years, I think 50% of our drivers only have a 10 limit. And of course, the worst drivers only have minimal coverage because their insurance rates are so high because they're such bad drivers. So you have to have underinsured motorist coverage, which I've talked about on many programs, which means this. I remember going to a seminar right after law school. I graduated and went to my first seminar, and was this older, gray-haired lawyer. And he said this comment that has stuck in my mind ever since. He says, when you bring a claim against the uninsured motorist or underinsured motorist, your carrier, they get to stand in the shoes of the defendant. And he goes, stand in the shoes. And at first, I didn't quite get his point. And then it dawned on me what he was saying was that your carrier could argue everything the original defendant carrier could argue. They could, your own carrier could say, we think you are speeding. We think you are not wearing a seatbelt. We think you have pre-existing injuries that you're trying to blame on this accident. We don't think you're that injured. We think you've over-treated. We think you've under-treated. You know, whatever they can argue. So whatever the defendant, their carrier can argue, once you make a UM claim, they can too. So when you give that recorded statement to your company and it becomes a UM case, now they lowball you maybe. And now you're in the courtroom 3 or 4 years later, and now they're replaying this recorded statement. So if Meg were to give that statement, then let's say right after the accident, she's got her bell rung and she's hurting all over, and Meg tells about your injuries. And Meg says, well, my neck really hurts, my back really hurts, and that's about all she said. Well, what if her headaches were there, but she just didn't mention them, and then they get worse as her neck and back get better, her headaches become almost incapacitating, and there's pounding, and she gets injections in the back of her neck, or occipital nerve, and Botox, and all these things, yet she didn't mention headaches on that recorded statement, that brief one that happened a day or two after the accident. You don't think her own insurance company, his lawyer, is going to pound her to death in the courtroom 3 or 4 years later? Ladies and gentlemen, jury, she was asked about her injuries. She didn't mention headaches. And now she's here asking for money and blaming headaches that no test has shown. There's not one test. Her brain MRI was normal. And she's asking for money. She wants you to believe and give her money because she says she has headaches. So, that kind of argument. So there's nothing good to become of these recorded statements. Trust me, you don't have to give a recorded statement to the at-fault party or your own carrier. You could just simply, and a lot of times people, you're forced to converse with these people because you're trying to resolve the property aspect. I mean, you need transportation to get to work. You want to get in a rental car as soon as possible. But once again, they make it sound, well, we'll consider that, but first you're going to give this. No, you don't. No, you don't.
Well, that's really great to know, Terry, because I would be trusting my carrier to take care of me. So hearing this, I've never heard this before, but I am now never going to give a recorded statement from what you said, because it actually would hurt me in the long run.
It potentially could. There's nothing good to come from it, and it can potentially, you know, they twist something you said or whatever. And here's the other problem. There is a word out there, Meg, called masking. So let's say in this accident, Meg, you fracture your ankle. You push down on the brake real hard, and this guy runs a stop sign, so it's a T-bone. So the front of your car hits the side of the car, big impact, and you're just smashing on your brake as hard as you can, and you fracture your ankle, which is actually a pretty common injury for that type of thing, and you get flung around like a rag doll. Now you give a recorded statement, and they ask about your injuries, and you go, well, they told me at the ER that I got a fractured ankle, and it's killing me. Anything else? That's about all I know about. Well, as that ankle heals, and as you start to get about because you've been sedentary, all of a sudden you got a crick in your neck and your back, and may become the features. You know, so early on, masking. So for instance, I'll joke about this, but let's say, Meg, you say, Terry, I got the worst headache today. I can't believe I'm even at work. And I say, Meg, do you want me to make that headache go away right now? You know, will you, you'll do that? I said, yeah. Put your hand on the table, and you put your hand up. If I hit your thumbnail with a hammer, you're not going to feel your headache.
That's an extreme example.
Oh,
that's not good.
It's called masking.
Well, no, I get it.
Masking. We concentrate what hurts the worst. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times people want to call people fakers for whiplashes, but a lot of times I've heard the story a million times from honest, genuine, everyday people. And, you know, right after the accident, you're just relieved that nothing's broken. You kind of feel yourself and nothing's broken. You don't see any blood. And you're saying, thank you, Lord, you know, because it was a big impact. And you get out and you walk around, you feel a little woozy, a little stub up, your heart's beating real fast. And then they come and the ambulance comes. Do you want to ride to the ambulance? No, I'll be okay. My husband's going to come pick me up and whatever. And you feel just woozy. You go to bed early that night and you wake up the next morning and you can't get out of bed. Your neck and back are screaming because it's set in. But yet they may have a witness, the defendant from the scenes. And the defendant says, I came up to her right after the accident. I said, are you okay? And Meg said she was okay. I remember. I said, are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. And she turned down, I saw her, and the ambulance person came up to her, and she turned down the ambulance. I saw that. And so whatever, you know, so, and then I make it look like, oh, it's contrived, you're a faker. Well, it took a while for this to set in. And,
isn't it true that your
it just gets worse.
Isn't it true your body goes into shock? You may not have symptoms for 24, 48 hours.
I wouldn't really describe it as shock. It could be initial shock at the scene, but it's just the nature of the injury. It's just sort of, I don't know how to describe it. Just sort of, it can just set in. It's not always an immediate ah. I've
right.
had people with herniated disc in their neck or back that really didn't feel a whole lot of pain at the scene of the wreck, and then it wasn't until the next day or two that it just really flamed on. Like, and then. Here's the other bad thing. So then they start seeing a chiropractor, and chiropractors do a lot more than just crack backs. I mean, they do muscle stem. They do everything a physical therapist can do, a massage, cold packs, hot packs, you know, all kinds of modalities. And yet, even with that conservative care, with some injuries, you just get worse. It's not the chiropractor's fault. It's just the nature of the beast. As it sets in, it can just, even with good conservative care, it can get worse with time, and with the swelling and so forth. So, you know, you sprain your ankle, it may not look too bad right that moment. Next morning, it can be like a grapefruit, you know. So it's
right.
It is what it is. But anyway, so these are just things. I mean, and there's the other thing that I don't understand. I want to make this very clear because there's so many of these lawyers. You see these billboards out there, and we have no billboards, by the way. I'm proud to say that. But we have no billboards, but yet on billboards you'll see free consultations. Well, let me just tell you something to the public. Every personal injury lawyer I know or have ever met has a free consultation. I've never heard of a personal injury lawyer charging for a consultation. Divorce lawyers do, wills and estates lawyers do. So people get contract lawyers. If you get a business lawyer, you go in to talk to your business lawyer, they have a consultation fee. So, but there's no such thing in a personal injury case. Then they'll say on the billboard, we only get paid unless you win. Well, That's the contingency fee. That's every personal injury lawyer. We all work on a contingency fee. So they're not, it's almost like McDonald's advertising, we have cheese on our cheeseburgers. Well, duh. We actually, our hamburgers, we give the bread for free. You get a bun with your hamburger.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I figured that much. I mean, so that's how dumb it is. But yet they make it sound like they're offering you something very novel and, you know, they're separating themselves from the pack. Where that's every lawyer. So with that being known, why wouldn't a person reach out to a personal injury lawyer, not your friend in church? Your lawyer friend in church may be the nicest guy, maybe one of your best friends, but if he's a wills and trust lawyer, if he's a real estate closing attorney, that's like talking to your gynecologist about a broken ankle. That's like talking to your an ENT about your colon. You know, but people say, oh, he's a lawyer, he must know. And they come to these parties, and they're asking me all about, well, my grandmother died, she didn't have a will, and then my cousin wants the house. I'm going, I don't know. I don't. What do you mean, don't know? I'm a personal injury lawyer. Talk to a wills and estate lawyer. I mean, I'll give a name or something. But so you should talk to a personal injury lawyer and just know your rights. And this is many of the things I'm telling today. This is when I tell the people as soon as they call me, if they're smart enough to call me before they'd given a recorded statement and all that.
Do you recommend
more people are taking pictures?
Do you recommend, Terry, that they call from the accident site before they even talk to anyone to reach out to you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, that'd be pretty quick. I mean, if they already know me, I mean, some people, we all have friends and acquaintances and that sometimes happens, but a perfect stranger calling from the city, that may be a bit far-fetched. I mean, you got a lot of things going on in your head right then, and, you know, so whatever, but as soon and better after as possible, you know, and we do get that, and we're able to give you advice before, you know, the horse gets out of the barn, because once the horse is out of the barn, I mean, so a lot of times people call me several days later, and I say, well, don't give a recorded statement. And they go, well, I already did, Mr. Gross. Okay, well, you did. Okay. And the horse out of the barn, it's out of the barn. Nothing you can do about it. You
right.
Know, can't unring a bell. But these are just things I'm trying to let people know. As usual, I can see our time has just run on us. And I know you're about to pull the plug on me. So this has been a PSA brought by me, Terrence A. Gross. I have been practicing for 46 years. Our fiscal phone number is 850-434-3333. Our website, we have many of these topics on our website, grossandschuster.com, S-C-H-U-S-T-E-R, grossandschuster.com. And we love talking to people. We love meeting people in one of our many offices. If you call us, for an injury case, we usually do a quick intake with a paralegal. Then you meet the lawyer very quickly, and it can be live. It can be Zoom if you can't make it. Occasionally, we do phones. Whatever the person wants to do, we communicate in that fashion. But the good old way of meeting face-to-face is preferred if we can do that. If people are jammed up at their home, then we do home visits. If they've been incapacitated, we'll do that as well. So, this is Terrence Gross. I can't wait to talk to you guys in a week or two.
All right. Thank you so much, Terry. I always find everything you have to say so interesting. I learn something every time you're on the show. So thank you so much for your experience and knowledge. Gross and Schuster, you can reach them at, let me give you that phone number again, 850-434-3333. And you can also find out more information on Gross and Schuster, SCHUSTER.com. Thanks so much, Terry. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back with Pep Talk in just a few minutes.